podcast.
Welcome to We Knows Parenting. I'm Beth Newell, and with me is my little husband, Peter McNerney.
Hi.
That was not cute. I'm Peter McNerney.
God forbid you be cute.
I'm never cute. I'm a man.
Put your bespectacled voice back on. We are your hosts to talk about kids. And
parenting.
We had a pretty busy week here.
I'd say so.
Number one, numero uno, Halloween.
Oh, you think that's the biggest thing that happened this week?
I don't know. There's so much.
I think of one thing that's bigger than Halloween.
What? Oh, we have a new nephew.
Ding, 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 ding. Boo, boo, boo. Guests of the pod, my little brother Sam, sister-in-law Raisa. They had their
the
baby.
The star of the show, Raisa. The life creator herself.
Birthed a baby. Early.
Beautiful boy. Let's not give all of his details, social security, away. I know you are so tempted to do
social
that.
Social security may or may not be number, number, number.
I know you are on your way to listing his full name and street address. And
we FaceTimed with him tonight.
You did?
Yeah, are you jealous?
What did he say?
He said,
I can't wait.
I'm a baby that was born early, and I'm so tiny, and I'm swimming in my onesie, and I'm in my car seat, and I'm dead asleep, but I still look exactly like your little brother, Sam.
Man, that baby has no idea how hard I'm going to sniff his head.
I'm gonna sniff your head, baby.
Oh God, they're so tiny.
It's such a little baby.
Oh my God. I can't even process that right now.
The baby is home. Everyone's healthy. Raisa's family. A lot of family. Her mom just got in town from Bosnia. We're staying away. Because there's a lot of people around, they're recovering.
Yeah, we're not integral to the recovery. We would definitely just be a distraction from taking care of the baby.
There's plenty going on, but boy, I want to go.
I know, I want to see the baby, but I also just want Raisa to sleep a real sleep, the sleep of human beings, where multiple hours pass.
Just accidentally did before this recording. I fell asleep.
And you woke up like you.
It was as
you
if.
You had a real moment, like a spiritual experience when you fell asleep in the bed and then I left you to relax for a second. And then I walked back in and you woke up like a toddler wakes up from a nap. You were like, you were like arching your back and like getting into, you're like standing on your feet practically. You're like, what is sleep? Like you're so,
drooling. I was drooling a lot.
You had a really abrupt.
I was panicked because I didn't plan to fall asleep.
Yeah.
It was scary.
You never cease to milk one of those moments for its full dramatic potential.
See, you've always accused me of being overly dramatic when I like,
but you're like, it's just my way. It's just my way.
But you've been around Bryn, our kids, right?
Yeah, who learned it from you.
That's just how his face works, what he thinks and feels. Is just on his face, and that's how
mimicking.
I am.
He's mimicking his examples, which include
on a
you.
Genetic level. He is. This is how we are, baby.
No,
we're expressive.
It's nurture, baby.
Hey, this expressiveness is it pays our bills. I'm making faces. Can you see it?
Oh, there you go, showing off your money making sounds.
Look at this mug.
But in the spirit of mimicry, our kids have rewatched the Charlie Brown Halloween movie called something about the Great Pumpkin.
The Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown?
Yeah, they've rewatched it a couple times now, and they've picked up some bizarre slang from the 1950s or 60s. And so last night, there's been a lot of like fighting and bickering between them lately.
For any and all reasons.
Yeah, and so I would overhear them talking, and they'd be like, if you don't do this, I'm going to pound you. And they kept threatening
to pound
each other. Like, Maven, they would both do it seriously. And Brennan would be like, well, if you do that, I'm going to pound you. And then, and they clearly don't 100% know what pound means. They were like talking it out, and they were like, they clearly are like, they know it's like a threat. But then,
and you were like, it's hashtag idiots.
A lot of the slang from this movie has resonated with them. They've been saying rats a lot. They're like, rats.
I encourage rats.
Yeah, rats is fine. And then they're saying, sorry, I'm just looking at my notes, which are not opening.
Oh, so
Bryn kept saying, he's like, you've got to stop that, you blockhead. And like every sentence he said would be punctuated by blockhead, but he clearly thought it was like a funny thing to say. So he'd kind of laugh, and it would kind of lighten the mood of all of his confrontations, because he's been very dramatically confrontational lately.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll be like, you're a bad mommy. If you don't do this, you're not going to be able to watch TV this weekend.
It's all threats.
And he's like, he's using our language on us.
Oh my God, can I tell you the argument that we had in the car today?
Please.
He was something about butts and farts. He's like, Daddy, teacher said, thought it was really funny. My talk about farts. And I wasn't fully listening. And then I tuned in and I was like, wait, you think your teachers like it when you talk about butts and farts? And he's like, yeah, most of them. I'm like, I find that hard to believe.
He's probably right.
And then he goes, yeah, my teacher said to not ask her about it. I go, well, you know, parent-teacher conferences are coming up. I'm going to ask her about it. And he goes, no, they said the rules are you're not allowed to ask. If you ask, the police will come get you and put you in jail. And so then I just was goading him on. And I was like, it's not against the law. It's against the rules. There's a difference. Well, he goes, school has laws. Daddy, school has laws. You can't ask. I'm like, well, I'm going to ask. You go to jail. I'm like, well, then I'll go to jail, but I'm going to ask.
He
started getting so upset. And then finally he goes, don't ask. Okay, they don't like farts and butts. I lied. And I said, I know.
They don't like
I'm like, tell the truth. He goes, okay.
There's another story I was going to tell you. But first, I'm going to tell you that he threatened to call the police on me this weekend.
Yeah.
And I said, well, what if I call the police on you?
Oh, good.
And he said, kids can't go to jail. And
I did tell him that.
And then he repeated this outside because our neighbor, who is almost exactly Bryn's age, was walking up the stairs with him coming in from outside. And he was like, they were like just talking about some fantasy nonsense 5-year-old stuff where they were like, and then he'll go to jail and die. And then, and they're like just like trying to say like the craziest things they can think of.
And then they'll put his butt in jail.
And Bryn was like, kids can't go to jail. Like this is his new, this is his theme song. Kids can't go to jail.
Kids can't go to jail. I tried it hard, but they wouldn't let me in. Now kids can't go to jail.
According to his version of events, he has tried. He pulled the fire alarm and they threatened to put him in jail at school.
That is when I told him, Because he said that he lied to the police. I don't even know if he talked to the police, but I told him he should not lie to the police. And that he goes, I didn't want to go to jail. And I said, they won't put you in jail. They're not going to put a little kid in jail.
So, okay.
So now he's bragging about how kids going to go to jail.
Here's one of the major stories of our weekend, which I haven't told you, is that I got home. So Sunday morning, I realized that Bryn didn't have skating, and I had a very scant couple of hours to escape and try to do the mountains of work I have to do. Mm-hmm. And I came home a little frazzled, and my children were very stir crazy from being inside all day, and the house was a disaster, and they both were too edgy to get dressed in any sort of logical, rational way. Uh-huh. They were both the most difficult people ever. And when I would step away from them a second to like clear my head and like put things away, they would like come immediately try to undo what I'm doing or start fights with each other or just like be horrible. So I kept having to pull them apart and like try to calm one down while the other one was like creating pure chaos. And then I was with Maven and Bryn was in the kitchen and I was trying to get her dressed. And she was like continually naked, but like putting on mittens because I was trying to put the mittens away, you know, like just like annoying. And she, so then I calm her down. I get her to like finally start picking out real clothes. I'm like, I have to get you guys out of this apartment or you're going to murder me in my sleep. And then Bryn, I go walk into the kitchen. Bryn's standing on the counter trying to do something he's not supposed to do. And he spots me, startles, and not fully standing on the counter, falls off the counter onto the ground, rolls on his side, slams his head into the ground, has like a big bruise. And then he starts pulling a U, which is like wandering around the apartment, crying to himself, like recovering, and then just like doing gentle sobs, circles around the room.
Wow. You know, sometimes people actually feel what they feel and their face is showing what they actually feel.
I did think that's what he felt, but he was like, I would be comforting him and then he'd wander away and then he would just like...
He told me this story lightly, and he told me this bump, it's not better. Tonight he goes, it's not better. It won't be better for 50 days. That's how long this bump takes to get better.
Well, it happened on the tail of just like so many, many examples of me telling them to not do things that were going to hurt them or bother them and just them both ignoring me. And so I was at that point as a parent where you're kind of like,
you see,
go bump your head, you idiot. No, but like I was kind of like, I didn't want to like rub it in while he's crying, but there's points where he was like recovered and I was like, do you understand why you should listen to me when I am telling you not to do dangerous things? And like, it's just really.
Yeah, you try to find those moments because you it's not good to do that like when he's too emotional and you're upset and it's the like, you see?
Right.
He's not going to absorb anything. But
right.
But to calm him down, be on his side, and then find those little moments to go, do you see where this started? So he can recognize it next time. So he can brag about it to daddy later.
Brag about what?
A bump in his head. He was real proud.
It was really such a dramatic fall.
We didn't even talk about Halloween. I was working that night.
You were working.
This is the first Halloween I ever missed.
I took the kids around the co-op buildings. It was good because especially now that Bryn is in kindergarten, he has like three friends who live in our co-op building community. So
yeah, they're actually now friends for the first time for real.
Yeah, they're like really becoming friends.
Instead of just being kids that they've seen before.
I was actually, when I was walking in yesterday and we happened to run into our neighbor across the hall, her son that I was just talking about, Bryn was like, hey, I'm really excited to go back to school tomorrow. Like he's just talking about like Monday at school and he was like, it's going to be so cool. We're going to get to see each other. And this other mom was like, I'm so glad that they like school.
It's like,
They do like school, except every day when I pick them up again.
They're so tired, and then they just lie to your face. And
lie
like,
to your face.
Everything was bad today. I hate everyone.
I'm never doing anything ever again.
Did Bryn go to nature class this week? Was he supposed to?
I didn't ask him about it, but theoretically, he did not go to cooking class.
That's good.
But he was very weirdly... So daylight savings has happened, mm-hmm. as you may recall. And that means in the morning when I take them super early to the car, the sun was up, whereas it was not up the week before. Brennan may have noticed, huh, that's interesting. When I picked him up, it was dark where it was not last week. And Bryn thought that was incredible. It's dark. And it was super dark when you pick him up at 5. And he goes, Daddy, do me a favor and tell Maven when we go pick her up that you love picking me up when the sun is down. And I go, okay, sounds great. Then we picked up Maven, and of course I forgot about it because it was a very weird request. And then Brent really got upset. He goes, you didn't tell her. I go, what? You didn't tell her about the secret. I had no idea what he's talking about. And then finally he had to like whisper to me. He goes, that you love picking me up in the dark. And he was like on the verge of tears. And then I go, hey, Maven, you know, I love picking up Brent in the dark. And then Brent just started laughing hysterically. Mission accomplished.
They both keep getting caught up in some incredibly dumb logic where they'll like start arguing with each other and then they both lost the thread but they just keep responding to each other and they're like
just trying to win.
They're like, no, octopuses don't do that. And like Mavis like in tears and that they're just like,
I don't dream of octopus. I don't.
Yeah. It's just fun.
It's fun. Fun arguments we're having. I'm learning them to just not engage. Bryn goes, I'm going to make up new rules, okay? Whoever I eeny, meeny, miny, mo, they're going to be the winner.
Yeah. Well, Bryn is classic you. He's like, oh, yeah, we can do this as long as I'm in charge and I tell you that I get to have all the best stuff.
Yep. Last thing I'll talk about is tomorrow/today when this episode comes out is election day. And I explained to Bryn what an election is. And he understood it. And I used, for example, our town, because I found there was a flyer for a candidate running for mayor. So I kept talking about, you know, as an example, running for mayor. And he goes, are people going to vote for you, Daddy? I'm like, well, probably not. He's like, why? You should be mayor. I want you to be mayor. I will vote for you.
And wow, then I explained, this is like your dream come true.
I was like, well, Bryn, if I am the mayor, I can't be a story pirate anymore. So I'd have to quit that job and I'd have to run the town. And he goes, Daddy, I still want you to be mayor. So wow. Please,
strong
if you're...
please vote for Peter tomorrow. Write in candidate local...
Peter McNerney in whatever local election or state.
Yeah, he'll take any city or town.
Yeah, I'll run it. If I'm eligible and I have the majority of the votes,
this
reminds
I will me
run your town.
Another weird thing our kids have gleaned from this Charlie Brown movie is that they like go off in corners and they're talking to themselves sometimes and Maven will be like, you sign the contract. And then like they'll just parrot things that they've heard on TV where you're like, you don't know what that means. What do you
Yeah. It just makes you realize how many things you know, but you don't know when you actually understood what it was, but you've known it. You know when you one of those things where you've never stopped and actually thought about what the words themselves mean because it's just a phrase or something you've known your whole life.
Are you going somewhere with this?
No. End of segment. And now it's time for my headphone cable to get tangled. And what? Now it's time for a segment called Did You Knows? This is where we share something we learned that's parenting related. Beth, my love, what do you got?
Thank you, my love. Okay, so I just wanted to share this blog post that some moms I know were sharing around this week. And I'll be honest, I did not research this heavily, so I don't have a lot of context to give it. But it's from a website called grahamseabrook.com, and it's a blog post from this woman who is a mom coach. And it says, an open letter to straight married dads from a mom coach. Mm. And she starts it by asking, why are you here? Are you here to raise your family in partnership with someone you love? And then she goes on and sort of asks these dads a series of questions like, who is your child's pediatrician, dentist, optometrist? What are the names of your kids' two best friends? And sort of like, how many times a week does laundry need to be done in your house, et cetera? And just sort of, she sort of questions the usefulness of heterosexual male partners in a way that I don't necessarily think applies to you 100%, but I think
I want to take this
very
quiz.
Relevant. I think was resonating very hard with women in different mom groups I'm in. But she, let me get to the end here. She says, parenting is not a spectator sport, and far too many of the mothers I coach tell me how much easier it is when their partners aren't home, because at least then there's no expectation that this time he'll do something to lift the load. If what you bring to your household is a paycheck, then why are you there? You don't have to live there to support them financially. Are you coming home, dumping your feelings about your day on your partner, sitting down to a table to eat, and then moving on with your night? You just missed about a million steps, my dude. And honestly, I'm done. I'm over it. And I've had it up to here with meeting brilliant, caring, thoughtful mothers who are working to heal their traumas, to give their children happy and healthy childhoods, and who keep running into a brick wall of husbands or partners who think that simply because they're doing more than their dads did, they're heroes. 100% more than 5% is only 10%. Parenting is complicated, exhausting, labor-intensive, logical, emotional, mental work. Holding on to your personhood as a mother in today's world is all of that and more. So, dads, my question is, why are you here? And the, she goes on. Anyway.
I just started reading this article as you were sharing it. And you should... obviously, everyone's... situation is different, but just starting to read these questions really makes its point quite clearly. Can I read some of these questions?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so yeah, this is a good thing to ask yourself. What are the names of the people who care for and or teach your children? What are their school policies? How long does your kid need to be fever free before they can go back to school? Who is your child's pediatrician? Where are they located? What are their hours? What is their phone number? Does your child like them? Dentist? Optometrist? What are the names of your two kids' two best friends? What are their parents' names? What size of clothes and shoes do your kids wear? Where do you usually buy them? Where are your kids? What are your kids worried about right now? What are they excited about? What are they scared of? What do they want most? Who do they love? How many times a week does laundry need to be done? It's, you know, the childcare is not always shared equally amongst parents, and that's part of the deal that different couples make in terms of who's working and who's not. But by reading this list of questions, I thought was a really simple, brilliant way of painting a picture of what a person is doing all day to take care of children. You know what I mean? And also I wanted to take that quiz because I could answer every single one of those questions.
Every single one of them.
Well, they don't have optometrists, but every single one. You can quiz me if you want.
I don't know if you would get 100% on this quiz.
Ask me. I don't know if you'd get 100% on this quiz.
That's true. But I like, Okay, how many loads of laundry need to be done per week?
Need to? I mean, if we're doing it right, we do.
See, this is the thing. Whenever like a mental load thing comes up that you're unaware of, you like heterosexual men try to paint a picture of women as being like obsessive about it for knowing what needs to get done. Like, if you're accumulating a certain amount of laundry per
week, let me finish.
It needs to get done at some point. Like,
sure. But I mean, if we're doing it as much as like a part of a nice regular routine, it's like 4 times a week. But you could wait a little longer and do 2 overly big loads.
Okay, but like this is how you are with like baths and a lot of things where it's like, fine, I'll let it slide because you're more on top of other day-to-day things. But like the thing is, it's like the weeks where I'm not 100% on top of it, it's like I go to meet our kid at his school on Halloween and he's in a costume getting sweaty and I'm like, this kid smells. This is a stinky kid because
you know,
I'm the only parent who is paying attention to how much this kid smells.
Oh, I'm paying attention. I hate baths and I hate laundry. I hate bath time. I don't know why. I gave them a bath tonight because boy, they were stinky. I did it. But you're right. I do. But also like, you know, I think we have those things. For you, it's trash and dishes. I do more of those. And yours is laundry and baths. And we both make an effort on the opposite ones that we don't do as much.
Okay, but you put dishes in the dishwasher. I herd them into the kitchen from your desk and the living room and the bedroom and the table.
I think we're definitely equal. But you have pointed out the things that I'm weakest at.
Okay.
But
I don't take out the trash. That's one thing I don't do.
You literally never do. But that's fine. I know that. And I take pride. I'm the trash guy. I'm really good at it. I'm great at separating recycling.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah.
I think the difference is when, as a woman, I think I'm much more likely to know the areas where I'm weaker in, whereas I think you believe that the areas that you're not doing are either not important or not happening.
You're just
completely like dissociated from.
Because I have learned so many things. I've become aware of so many things that I was blind to before. I'm like, oh, I see so much more than I ever did before. So I accept the idea that there will always be something else that I just can't see right now. That's why everyone should always, if you feel like you're doing 70%, you're maybe doing 50. I subscribe to that more than I ever have before. But I think the thing that's great about this blog post is exactly that, is you read all those questions and you're suddenly shedding light on things that you just might not be thinking about. You look at all the work that's going on that you're aware of and you go, oh, I'm crushing it. I'm doing all this stuff. But read this super long list of all these little details and then it's like, it just shines lights on these areas you didn't even know were there, maybe. And even if your duties within a couple are distributed differently and it's not doing the exact same things, being aware of what your partner is doing is incredibly healthy.
Incredibly healthy. Yeah, I just think I know that you're doing a lot of day-to-day stuff. I just still think there's like big picture stuff that I feel obligated to be tuned into that I don't think you always are. And I'm not saying I'm shouldering all of that, but like for example, this weekend, like when I left the kids with you to do work and stuff, I feel like you were at your computer most of the time while they were just getting more and more stir crazy. And then when I get home, I have to like clean and deal with them and make sure they get outside and make sure laundry's done for the weekend, and then like realize that Bryn's shoes are falling apart and he needs new sneakers. And like, there's just like all those little things that you're like, okay, it's the weekend, I have to make the most of it and like make sure this things are running smoothly going into the week. Like, you do a lot of stuff. So I'm not saying you do nothing, obviously, but there is stuff like that where I'm just like, I don't always know how bad these things would get without you realizing.
Yeah, well, those are great examples of where, you know, the shoe falls apart. And then I'm like, well, time to get new shoes. And you're looking ahead on those things. I know that I am better at...
But there's also little, like, quality of life things where I'm like, I'm not saying I'm a hero, but like... Every day, I make sure that, like, the blinds and, curtains are opened in our home so that we get natural light coming in the way human beings are meant to live.
The only reason I open the curtains is because I'm like, oh, Beth will come in here and not want to see this. I do it for you if I do it at all. But yeah, but where I am stronger, where I am better is that like I'm going to pay all of our bills. I'm going to take the car in. I'm going to make sure the doctor appointments
like,
are made.
Your way of interacting with it is so funny to me because you know the doctor's name. You know where he is. You know when the doctor yearly appointment needs to happen. If our kids were getting sick, I don't know that you would be like, oh, maybe they should stay home, or maybe I should call the doctor and ask about this, or you like...
What are you talking about? That's what I do. That's my job.
When they're sick?
Yeah. Who takes them to urgent care every time it takes them to the doctor? I'm the one who saved an old doctor's note on my computer so I can edit it.
I'm not talking about when you try to drop them off at daycare and then daycare rejects them and says, these kids are too sick, you need to go get a doctor.
I know. This is... You're talking about a me that doesn't exist anymore.
No, because you...
What are the school sick policies, Beth?
What are the school sick policies?
Yes. When can you take your kids back to school?
I know how it is for daycare. It's usually 24 hours without a fever.
That's not what it is at daycare.
Okay. What is it?
It's much stricter than that. That is what it is for school. You can't take them back unless if it's been 24 hours since they've thrown up or had a fever. And in daycare, it's you could never take them back ever until they've had 12 doctor's appointments. And
12 doctor's appointments?
Until they had a second opinion. And then
okay,
so a note.
You are reinforcing my point, which is that you know when people are forcing you to take your kids to the doctor.
I know what the policy
I'm talking about, you know the policy, you know the names. I'm talking about I am the one who will wake up in the morning, look at my kids and say, this is a kid who cannot go to school today.
You are right. You know what? You're 100% right. I will find, I'm like, how do I just get through this moment? It's fine. To a fault, but boy, I know all the details. I know all the factors. I know all the rules. I know where we're going. I just, I'm not so worried. I'm not as worried as maybe I should be.
Okay. Well,
I think we complement each other well.
Yeah, I'm not saying those things are not valuable. I'm just saying that's not the whole picture.
Yes,
I agree. What needs to get done.
I agree.
Someone needs to sniff the air and be like, this apartment is rancid. These children are rancid.
Someone needs to sniff a butt and realize that butt needs a tub. You know what? You were... had a very smart idea, and this illustrates your point, I think, well, is that you texted me or something about them needing to take a bath. And you said, we also need to clean out those cupboards. So why don't you take one of those bath bombs to get them to get into the tub? You know what? Bryn wouldn't get in the tub. And I threw a bath bomb in there, and he wanted to get in the tub.
Yeah.
And that's you.
Because big picture, I'm like, okay, dear Lord, I have to renovate this bathroom. I'm going to have to take that cabinet out of the bathroom. I have to do X, Y, Z, 10 million other things. That cabinet needs to be cleaned out. There's a bunch of bath bombs in there for some reason. My kid needs to bathe. My brain is like a serial killer's wall map of like trying to keep my children alive.
And my brain is, I'm just looking at the current pin on the wall map. And then I go, ooh, there's a red string. And I just start following the red string. And I go, there's another push pin. I'm going to follow this red string.
You're like a boomer who just figured out how to drop a pin on Google Maps.
Oh, take that, boomers. I definitely need to step back away from my corkboard in my dimly lit garage to take a look at the big map. And not just look at the push pins. It's a shockingly good metaphor. Oh boy, this has been... Did you know? Now it's time for Listeners Wanna Knows. So, last week... a listener wrote in asking for recommendations of books where sort of gender roles were reversed. Specifically, she mentioned wanting stories about basically girls who misbehave and boys who carry the emotional labor. And we
gave her
short on recommendations.
Not very good recommendations, but luckily you guys wrote in with some more.
You delivered.
One message I got from an Instagram message says, they recommended the book called Marlene, the Queen of Mean. She says, it's a library book my daughter brought home about a girl who is the bully. If a female instead of a male bully doesn't break gender stereotype, maybe I don't understand the concept. That's what she, I think she understood the concept.
I think she understood the concept.
Yeah.
that's great. I got a bunch right here. Someone wrote in. This is from Della. She said, listen to your podcast where a listener asked about some good books for challenging traditional gender roles. And she cited a list that she found from the New York Times. My kiddo is only 20 months old, so I can't speak for everything on the list, but I checked out a bunch and my little one and myself really enjoyed them. My faves were Franny's Father is a Feminist, shows a little girl who likes to be a messy and dirty sometimes, and her dad who takes on some of the traditional women's roles, and Teddy's Favorite Toy, about a little boy who loves a doll and his pretty superhero-esque mom. My kiddo's faves were Shark Lady, maybe he just liked the sharks, and Julian is a Mermaid.
Oh, we just got Julian is a Mermaid. Which
I read this last night.
I have to say that... illustrations in this book, as someone who is an illustration major who for two semesters took children's book illustration classes, the illustrations in Julian is a Mermaid are incredible.
Oh, yeah.
And they also sort of, they reference like the Brooklyn Mermaid Parade. So it felt, I don't know, it feels very reminiscent of my college experience in a way that warmed my heart. But it's really beautiful. I will say in terms of reading it, there's pages without words, so you do have to kind of like explain what's happening on the page.
Well, you know what I did?
What
is normally I do that. I explain everything. I over-explain.
Yeah, you love to never stop talking.
I love to explain. But I didn't. I just turned
the page
and I sat there quietly and I let them absorb each page. And I saw them really looking and listening and thinking. Until they started chiming up about things.
Well, I will say what's cool about this book is like we've talked in the podcast sort of about like books that deal with sex and gender and different issues. And one of my pet peeves about those type of like progressive books is sometimes you get ones that are too didactic or like trying to force lessons down your throat too literally.
Yeah.
And that the beautiful thing about Julian is a Mermaid, which has no words on some pages, is like you're watching this young boy sort of like fall in love with these mermaids and then sort of put on this costume. And it's very ambiguous as to this kid's gender representation or sexuality or whatever, but it's just this kid, it's this kid's joy for those mermaids. Like, it's great.
In his dreaming of himself, there's those pages where he's on the train or whatever, and he sees these women dressed as mermaids. Then you see him thinking, and then there's illustration of him step by step morphing into a mermaid. And then they see, and then he's underwater as this beautiful mermaid with long hair. And it, they don't spell it out like, oh, this is the boy who wants to be a girl. No, it's not that specific. It's exactly that.
It's just this kid exploring his love of being
there's no, like, there's no lecture to the book.
Right.
It's beautiful.
And you know what's cool is like, Bryn has been mentioned for a couple months now, the idea that for some reason he wants purple sneakers.
Mm-hmm.
And only in the context of the sneaker discussion does he claim that his favorite color is purple, in my experience.
He's never said that before.
No, but so it's like, I don't really know if that's true or he's just saying that. But then I talked about getting him a new pair of sneakers because his were falling apart. And then he said again that he wanted purple sneakers. So we went to the toy store in town that sells sneakers, which was closed. And then we went across the street to this other store and they measured his feet, which was cool. And then we looked at the sneakers on the wall and there was some purpley sneakers, but they were clearly girls where they were like pinky, purple, whatever. And I was like, it was one of those weird things where you're like, well, I want to get him what he wants, but I want to make sure he really wants it and he's going to be comfortable wearing it. And so he pointed at one that was like, it was just a really pale purple where I was like, I don't know if this is really what you want, but I was like, I'm going to support this. So I asked them to look for the size. And then I took him down and I was like, I just wanted to be real because I don't want to pay for a pair of sneakers he's not going to wear.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, Bryn, if you like these sneakers, I will get them for you. But I just want you to know, if you wear these to school, some kids might call them girly. And I just want to make sure you're still going to want to wear them, even if people say that. And he said, yeah. And then they went to get the sneakers, and then they didn't have his size in that pair of sneakers. And then he got really bored of being in the sneaker store, and we left. And I was like, well, now I know his sneaker size. I'm going to order him other purple sneakers.
Yeah.
So I got him some purple high tops that feel fairly gender ambiguous to me. But I was like, not that it really matters what he wanted, but I actually don't think from past experience that he's like super comfortable with other kids commenting
on
his appearance.
I mean, what kids are.
Yeah. I don't know. It's more, I think what I am sensitive to for some weird reason is like, it's like an aesthetic thing. And again, I went to art school. I love all the colors. There's something about when things get like glittery and girly where it doesn't appeal to me personally. And then
So how do you feel about
my own hang up?
I have that too, but I figured it was some sort of gendered thing in my brain.
I don't know.
But until Maven, who's like, I love glittery pink. I love her love of it.
Yeah.
Because it is so deep and true. Whereas Bryn one day saying, I love purple, I'm like, since when?
I like her love of it, but I just think there's something in my brain that loves like saturated colors, which is kind of I don't like pale pastel, like, I want like a bold version of the color.
Every apartment we've lived in, the colors on the walls have gotten more pastel because we've started bold and they've just come down a bit, but we still have bold colors and I love it. And I love you.
Oh, thank
this
you.
Email goes on. You guys discuss gender a lot, which I really appreciate. A book I read a while back was quite interesting, Parenting Beyond Pink and Blue. Wow, just like what we're talking about. Have you read it? Nope. I thought it was fascinating. Some takeaways for me were, one, how often we say things that subconsciously enforce gender grouping. The book quotes studies that talk about how kids will strongly identify with any group they are put in, and we as adults constantly categorize boys and girls in our language. I'm a teacher, so this was very applicable to me. Things like, girls come here, etc. Also language like, wow, you're getting to be such a big boy. Why not insert kid instead? 2, the automatic default to he when describing unknown gendered animals. I think about this stuff a lot and have done a lot of things to avoid gender stereotypes for my kiddos. For example, we found out the gender before birth, but didn't tell anyone so that any gift we received wouldn't be gendered. Try that. Everyone hates you for it. I was shocked when I realized how often I defaulted to the pronoun he when describing things. Oh, look at that bear. What color is he? What's your stuffed horse? Can you bring him here? I've tried to be better, but it has been hard. Anyway, the book explains a lot more eloquently than I just did and backs stuff up with research. One last question. Quite a while back, you had a list on the podcast of books for young kids that deal with sexuality, changing bodies. I can't remember which it was. Do you have a written list somewhere? Or maybe you can remember which podcast it was. Thanks. I flippin' love your podcast, Della. I've been thinking about all of those things, Della, in terms of the default pronoun of he, specifically for animals.
It's hard to break out of that.
We're all programmed to do it.
I mean, we're all programmed to do a lot of things. One thing I think me and a lot of people I know lately have been trying to do is stop calling things crazy or insane. Like, it's just really hard to get stop using certain words in your vocabulary that you're used to using, you know?
Yeah. Working in Story Pirates has forced me to words like that, crazy and insane.
I've noticed when I'm telling them bedtime stories at night, because we always like kind of come up with an animal or creature or something, and then we'll say, you know, we'll start telling a story with that, and like my impulse to label it as a male is really strong.
Yes, I've for story times we make up stories. I've been trying to default to she. Of course, it doesn't happen that much. So at best, I'm going 50-50.
At best.
But yeah, but it's
so hard.
We're
going to get our numbers up, though.
It's so hard not to be like, here's my big girl. This is my little girl. My girl.
Why can't you say girl?
I mean, just I do have the thought. I think it's fine to be like, you're such a big boy. But there is something, you are separating our... I feel like I'm worried I'm separating our two kids by continuing to define them by their gender.
I definitely worry about that, and I do think is like it's worth watching out for like where that creeps into our expectation of their behavior. But I also think there's a lot of moments lately where, like, especially with Maven, she's really loving being a girl right now, and I don't want to like take that away from her.
Yeah.
I want her to, if she continues to identify as a girl, like she should love being a girl. Like, why? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like,
Yeah. It's really easy to fall into these sort of absolute isms, when you're trying to do the right thing.
Well, I think also, here's the thing, is like, you know, there's nature and nurture, and you're never going to create the 100% best conditions for anything, and it doesn't really matter at the end of the day, because we're all unique individuals who are made up of a combination of nature and nurture, and what's sort of beautiful about it is, you know, these varying environments we've all lived in, and our own weird crock pot of identities. So like when Maven goes to daycare and she's around a lot of little girls, and the women who run the daycare are Spanish speaking women who mostly don't speak much English, I do think there is a tendency of them in general to like glorify kind of like girly things. Yeah. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's rubbed off on Maven a little bit. But yeah. I also think Maven just has a tendency to like those things. So I think she's just, you know, yes, it's reinforcing it a little bit more than maybe necessary. But like I think she's enjoying it. She's feeling like she's loving herself. You know what I mean? Like it's not.
Yeah. Well, there's this thing. This actually is applicable to a text exchange I had with my little brother today, where I don't know why I was thinking of this, but he's a behavioral science writer and neuroscience and so knows a lot about this stuff. So I texted him. I said, "Is there a word for when people react to learning that something they thought was a hard and fast rule isn't entirely true? For example, some vaccines have unintended side effects by completely turning on the entire concept. For example, anti-vaxxers." And then I said, "Also, how's your baby?" He said, "Good question. Sounds like the version of the base rate fallacy." The fallacy is that people ignore the fact that the vast majorities of vaccines do not have unintended side effects. That's the base rate. And instead focus on a specific piece of information. My point being, a lot of times when people realize, you know, things like, oh, gender norms are create this negative side effect. And you realize that, oh, there's these negative things to go, let's reject all of it. 1,000%. I've realized that a lot of those things I've gone too far in some respects, where I realize like, oh, they're,
yeah,
for some kids like Maven, this is naturally what they are drawn to. And there is a truth and there is a nuance to gendered norms that they're attached to some real things many times. And it's of course always far more complicated and nuanced than these sort of like absolute stances.
Well,
and
I think this kind of creeps into like our discussions of privilege sometimes, where like you know, we'll have different people who are privileged for various reasons, race, gender, economics. And like you sometimes like people, just think of a really funny example. So like sometimes people have a privilege that we all deserve to have, but we don't feel like we deserve to have it because we're so used to not having it. And sometimes people have a privilege that no one should have, but because we're so caught up in this rat race of trying to have what other people are having, we, instead of realizing that no one should be allowed to do that, we are mad that we don't have that. Mm-hmm. So like, these are kind of weird conversations I have with like cab drivers and Lyft drivers, where I'll feel like we're on the same page of like wanting things to be better for the world at large. Mm-hmm. And like, I had a Lyft driver the other day who like this car drove by us like really erratically and fast on the West Side Highway and like cut us off and whatever. And we both were just like, oh my God, like that's crazy. And I assumed we're both mad because this car could hurt someone and, you know, kill someone.
Yeah.
And my Lyft driver was like, if I drive like that, I would get pulled over. Like he was like, I can't get away with driving like that. Like he was mad that he can't do that. And this is like, I think where sometimes we make the conversation much cloudier than it needs to be, because when we lose our focus on what's important, which is like, in my mind, like, you know, basic things like everyone should have housing, healthcare, a living wage. Like, you know, we get thrown off because we get caught up in these like side discussions of like, well, who's allowed to sleep with their staff? And like, you know, like, it's just like, it, I don't know. It just gets off track, is what I'm saying.
I see what you're saying. I was like, during that, I was like, oh, are we going this way with it? Like, oh, okay. Oh, all right, see. All right, I got it. So we are.
But I
see what you're saying.
Like, I don't know. I think we find this like one fault in the system, and then we try to make it broad sweeping statements about it that should not apply.
Yeah, I'm just very attracted these days to nuance. You know, not the internet and the way it's set up a lot of the time, where, you know, especially if you're in your Twitter bubble or whatever, or in Facebook, and you're like, look at this thing. This thing is false. Let's reject the entire system, instead of going, oh, that is an interesting example. Let's get into the bigger picture. You know, get out of your bubble, read some dry research, learn about it, and go to the boring stuff because that's where things, the practical world lives.
Go to the boring stuff.
Read the raw transcript.
Well, there was a really good quote from Barack Obama this week where he was sort of talking about like this sort of like woke culture, which I don't even really think, he's not really talking about being woke so much as like people who are really reactionary about it. But like he was talking about how like everyone's like looking to call each other out these days for slipping up or whatever. And he was sort of like, if all you're doing out there is casting stones, then you're not helping. Like you're not, there's so many other things you could do to actually right these wrongs or like try to fight inequality or whatever rather like and I don't think he is saying like you can never comment on things blah blah, you know, like
right.
But
it's
if that's your only focus, like is to try to make yourself feel important by trying to call other people out, then like that's probably not really helping
it's anymore. Like having a it's like having a fight on Twitter where you're like, hey, here's a real thought, and someone's like, you know, in 100 characters, fuck this. Oh, great. Are we having a conversation? Just absolutely bad or absolutely good?
Yeah. And it's kind of like when there's important stuff happening, like, you know, the presidential election and stuff, which I think in 2020 we should know more than ever is like kind of an important thing that affects people's lives. If people are going into that discussion and their only perspective is to try to like criticize candidates and never put themselves out there and support anyone or any idea or anything.
Yeah.
Then you're not helping anyone. You know?
All right.
Were you going to say, do you want to endorse the candidate?
No, I was going to say, do your homework.
Do your homework.
Get into the boring stuff.
Get boring.
Read the boring articles.
Yeah.
All right, we're past time.
Okay.
We have so many more recommendations. We're going to have to do it next week.
We're out of time.
We're going to make a list of all the recommendations for books that you sent in.
Okay, we're going to prepare.
Like, we got
we're
like 15
prepare next
more.
Time.
If you got more, send them in. You guys are great. This has been another episode of We Knows Parenting. If you'd like to write in, send us another recommendation, ask us a question, tell us something we don't know, send us a would you knows hypothetical parenting scenario, you can do so at weknowspod@gmail.com. Or you can call us on our phone number that I'm very quickly looking up.
It's 347-384-7396. Find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at We Knows Pod, and please rate, review, subscribe.
We'll see you next time, y'all.
Bye.